Hi, everybody. This is Charmin Smith with Taming the Titta. I am a presidential candidate for 2020, and I am here for the next hour so that we can talk together about all the fun stuff nobody ever wants to talk about. We're going to talk about politics. We're going to talk about religion. We're going to talk about reality radio, because that's what we're dealing with today. Because the reality is that we are living in a world none of us ever thought we would be in. And we're living in a time where the normal rules no longer apply. And because of that, I can be here with you today, running for president, the biggest job in the land, with the least amount of experience from just a regular American citizen who just happens to be old enough to run for president, have enough qualifications. So thank you very much for your time today. We're going to be talking about a lot of different issues. Last week was our first show, and I had a fantastic guest host with me who was going to be with me for just one or two shows, but he will not be coming with me for the rest of this procedure, for the rest of this show. But I do appreciate him and the time that he was here with us last week, and for setting me up on this course so that I can follow my dream, because now is the time for everybody to just do it. If you have a crazy dream, you should be following it. Whatever it is, the world needs you now. Joe Biden said that if you're good at connecting the dots, we need you to come forward. And we're going to spend an hour today connecting the dots for the American voter, because politics is what we need to be talking about today. I know it's not fun, but we can make it fun. We're all dealing this week with some FFS, whether we want to deal with the fun that comes with it or not. It's part of our conversations now. So I thought we'd have some fun learning some information about your new first family. And I thought this would be a great time for us to talk about the first dude, the first kid, and some of the things that you can come to expect from the fun that comes from our family. Now, my oldest daughter promises me that I'm more entertaining than cable, so I'm going to try to do my best for this next hour to keep you entertained and give you some fun and get everybody prepared for this new journey that we're going to be going on together, because we're all going to be going on this together. All of America is on this train, and we're going to make it as fun as we can. So the first dude is a retired Navy helicopter pilot. He was with the Blue Angels for 4 years. He was on submarines. We lived in Mobile, Alabama during Katrina, and he was the disaster relief coordinator for Pascagoula Naval Station. We managed to live in Pearl Harbor, Hawaii, when the tsunami hit Japan, and he was on that staff as well. He is one of the funniest people I have ever met. He's a New England boy, and they always have such a good sense of humor. I like that about him. You're going to like it about him, too. I promise you, he's got a joke. He even had a bunch of dad jokes that he sent over to me so that I can share them on the air. We know how much you miss Obama and his dad jokes, and you are going to love your first dude's dad jokes, I promise you. He retired out of the Navy in 2012, and he got his first civilian job with Amazon. Now, we all hear a lot about Amazon in the news today, but I can promise you that from the perspective of a military wife, going and becoming an Amazon wife and being an Amazonian family was an education unlike anything the military had ever prepared us for. Amazon has a fantastic reputation for the way they treat their employees, and they have absolutely earned it 100%. And I can tell you, after almost 3 years of watching my husband work for them, I have a different perspective on the way they treat their employees, on the way, the transition that any of our military members make when they move from being active duty military to civilian. It is a difficult transition, and our family, we certainly feel that for the country, and we're going to do everything in our power to make it better for all the veterans out there who are struggling with the way we treat our veterans in this country. And I promise you, as president, as the first family, this will be a priority for us. We're gonna fix this because we believe that there's nothing so wrong with this country that it can't be fixed with a little common sense and compassion. And as a military family, we are definitely used to adapting and overcoming, and we have a lot of resiliency that exists within us. One of the things that we're going to talk about in this show over the coming months is resiliency. As a survivor of PTSD, it is most commonly, people think of PTSD when they think of military veterans. So it's funny for us in our relationship. My husband is a military veteran, but he doesn't have PTSD. I am a dependent. I do not serve. I have sacrificed. And my sacrifice is actually what caused my PTSD. And so we know that there is a lot of different angles and aspects that we need to come at all these problems from in order for us to actually be able to fix them and correct them and solve them so that our country can heal, because we're ready for this. As an Amazon family, one of the things that I noticed was, especially coming from the corporate environment of financial services, I had been a bill collector, a mortgage underwriter. I've done pretty much everything in financial services over 20 years, negotiated massive repurchase demands from Wall Street banks during the collapse of 08. One of the things I noticed about Amazon and their management is that they had managed to rework the schedule so that they eliminated an entire shift. It is brilliant, really, Amazon. They eliminated an entire shift of management. Most companies work their employees in 8-hour shifts, and there's three of them if you're running a building 24 hours a day. But Amazon expects their managers to work 12-hour shifts with an expectation that they will come in an hour before and an hour after. So their shift is really 14 hours long, 4 hours a day. You're walking in a massive warehouse that's the size of 4 football fields long, plus it's 3, sometimes 4 stories high. You have people walking 15 to 20 miles a day. My husband used to say that the job came with a free gym membership. You're going to lose weight. You're going to love it. It's a good time. He always has a fun way of making everything a little bit more entertaining. You know, one of the things that he took as a great deal of pride when he was in the military was keeping up the morale for his command. And certainly as a civilian watching military transition into civilian life, one of the saddest things for them to see is that civilian employees don't do the same morale building campaigns that the military does, just to keep people happy and motivated. And for military, to come from this environment where you're supposed to be part of a team and they care about you and your family as a whole unit, and you're important to command movements and to the world, and your family is also a part of that. And there is a camaraderie, there is a community. They call the military the world's largest fraternity. And there is a love of the way that they take care of each other and the relationships that they build with their battle buddies. And the way the military morale works and their camaraderie, that is something that is sorely lacking in civilian leadership and in the way that companies create the culture from within. And as a business professional who worked in offices for years, I knew that my job was like my home. I spent more hours a day with my fellow employees than I did my children. I'd far rather have been with my children than with my fellow employees, but I needed a job and I needed to make money, and I like doing things. And I'm a problem solver. I always need to be in the middle of something. Finance always gave me something to do. One of the things that was so different between my husband's military life and my civilian life was that camaraderie between the members of the military. They hung out outside of work. There's crazy parties, you know. There is traditions that are steeped in centuries of morale building events to keep people excited and motivated on long deployments. And in the civilian world, I even had times where I would work for a company and my spouse would not be allowed to come to events. They didn't want spouses to come to events. They civilians don't work to build up your morale and to keep you excited at work. And that is something that he has sorely struggled with as a civilian. And he is very fortunate because he's in a position where he gets to control the culture at his buildings that he manages. And he has created a beautiful culture that his company can be very proud of. And I think he's going to be instrumental in making positive changes across this country. And as we all work together to learn how to move through this new Me Too time, where survivors are coming forward and we're sharing our stories and women are getting equality at work and what that looks like and how we investigate sexual harassment claims. There is a lot that is taking place right now, and we need to be working together to build our morale, to communicate with each other in positive ways so that we can combat all these negative stories and feelings and fears that are coming at us, and we can do it together. I have faith in us. As a military spouse, one of the other things that a lot of people don't understand is that there is a stigma associated with being married to active duty military. And a lot of employers don't want to hire us. There is a real hard time being a military spouse because you're only going to be there for a couple of years and you're going to get transferred. And your employer can take the opportunity to look at it like they're training their competition. They want someone who's going to be with them for the long haul. And I had four employers tell me that I needed to make a choice between my military husband and my career because I couldn't have both. And I chose my military husband every time because it's easier to find the first dude than it is to find another J-O-B. And I tell you, it has worked out. It has been the funniest thing. There'll be so many opportunities for us to share other stories throughout that have happened and that will unite us and that will bring us together. But one of the things that we can absolutely all agree on is job and the importance of putting people back to work and the importance of making sure our military can transition easily. Us civilians, we're kind of used to the fact that our boss doesn't care about us and they think they can just give us a schedule 10 minutes before they expect me to show up. And I can put in a request 2 weeks early to go to a doctor appointment and they can decide to cancel and decline my doctor's appointment at the last time. We're kind of used to the fact that our employers don't really seem to care much about us. But these military people transitioning from a culture where the government cares about them and their family, the transition that they make to civilian life is personally one of the hardest ones for me to watch. And I always feel sad, but I do feel a great deal of excitement lately because people are talking more and more about our military and our veterans and the way we take care of them or don't take care of them. And this is an opportunity for us to review how we're going to make all of this better. You know, as a mortgage professional, I know that we have more vacant houses in this country than we have homeless people, certainly more than we have homeless veterans. And there's no reason why real estate-owned property being held by the FHA and VA, Freddie and Fannie, can't be reallocated to resolve some of the issues that we're facing within our country during this time. It is just the reality, and it's very difficult when you're dealing with government. It's got to come from the top down. It is time for us to reevaluate our priorities. And the people who are there now are not exhibiting behaviors that are consistent with making the people of the country, a priority. And we're going to take that back. And that's going to be a good time for us, for all of us together. My family is very excited about it. My husband is on board and he is looking forward to all the exciting new changes that will come with being the first dude and the social programs that he's going to be able to champion. You know, we are a blended family, and that's one of the things that will be very different about us as we move forward on this. He has two children from his first marriage. I have one child from my first marriage. We have two children together. We have his, hers, and ours. And we're a very accurate reflection of what other American families look like. And we're going to have a good time through this process. We're going to laugh a lot. We're going to joke a lot. We're going to talk about some serious issues. And I really thank you for coming along on this trip with me today. My name is Sharman Smith. You can find me at SharmanSmith.com. That's Sharman with an S, just like the toilet paper. Because I'm just like an S, I'm smarter, I'm stronger, I smell better than the TP, and I will clean up D.C. We don't need just any old TP in D.C., Trump, Putin, Trump, Pence. They just smear the mess around. It's time for a stronger, more durable product, and Sharman is here to clean this mess up and flush it away and give us some comfort and some grace along the way. We're going to take a break now in the next few minutes, and I look forward to coming back and chatting with you soon. Everybody, this is Sharman again with Taming the Titta. You can find me on Amazon. This is a book about politics, religion, and a reality TV show. Taming the Titta is what really got us started on this. But I had the best tweet last night from a fellow author, and he told me that he loved my book. He gave it a 5-star review on Amazon. I can't wait to see it. He said it was the perfect layout for a candidate to present their platform for 2020, and he couldn't wait to see what was going to happen. But the thing about writing a book about politics, to lay it out for a campaign strategy for you, is you have to really dive into the nuts and the bolts and the meats of some of the issues, because people want to talk about real things that are impacting them. They want to talk about health care. They want to talk about taxes. They want to talk about education and how we're going to fix the school system. I always try to talk about the fact that I support the death penalty for pedophiles. And as a survivor of sexual assault, I support revoking the statute of limitations on all sex-related crimes so that all victims have the opportunity to prosecute their predators. I believe that pro-choice extends to more than just abortion, and people deserve to have choices. And that includes victims having a say in sentencing and the right to choose death as an option. And while I know it's difficult for us to talk about, we certainly couldn't actually complete another execution until we've had a complete overhaul of our justice system. But I do believe that once we get to that point, you know, we don't have to do death for every sentencing. It will certainly be up to victims. There's the opportunity for lifetime sentencing. And once we clean the prisons out with all the people who are wrongfully accused and serving nonviolent sentences, and we legalize marijuana and we expunge those records, there'll be plenty of room in prisons for us to store the pedophiles and the rapists and the murderers who are wreaking terror and havoc across our country. No, we always, I hear a lot these days, you know, I've scheduled a bunch of interviews this week and I had this funny thing happen to me where, you know, someone scheduled with me and they were like, oh, but you're a Democrat, so that must mean you're into socialism and communism. I'll give you a chance anyways. Socialism, it almost cracks me up at this point. We the people are paying for everything. What do you think socialism is? And we the people are going to continue paying for everything. We just have to figure out a way to make sure that each person is paying their share. It is time for us to address the fact that our tax system is completely broken. You know, at one point in time in our country, we had this high tax rate for businesses, and that created the opportunity for businesses to buy senators because, quite frankly, it was cheaper than paying 80% in taxes. And now we have a tax code that allows businesses to make money off of our country, off of our regular citizens, instead of paying in to fix things like roads and healthcare and education. And it is time for us to reevaluate our priorities and fix the tax system, a flat tax, a percentage for everyone. We all have to pay something regardless of our age, our race, our religious affiliation. It's time to start taxing churches. There is no reason anybody in this country should get a get out of jail free card on taxes. We all need to pay. We all need to pay a portion, and it needs to be at the same percentage. As we move forward, taxes are one of those things that need to unite us. I have had the opportunity to have taxes explained to me by a teacher, and it terrified me. And we need to make sure we need to level set what the expectation is on taxes. Nothing is free. Nobody gets anything for free. There's always a cost associated with something. We're all paying for everything, whether we realize we're paying for it or not. We need to reevaluate the things we're paying for. I had this wonderful teacher who I really enjoyed in Ohio comment about how they had gone to D.C. and visited a Marine concert, and the Marines were giving a free concert in the park, and he just thought it was so fantastic that they were giving free concerts in the park. And he was so upset because there was a bill that had just gone in taking money away from the military. And I said, I know they're taking money away from the military. They're specifically taking away the money for that free concert. Nothing is free. Our tax dollars pay for that. Those military members could be somewhere else. They could be doing something else rather than providing a free concert in the park. If you'd like to listen to the Marine band play in the park, you could chip in $5. Nothing is really free. And so as a military spouse and a military veteran, or as a military spouse and a military brat, I am certainly not a veteran. And there is a lovely campaign where they say, you know, spouses serve too. And I'm a military brat from back in the days when if it wasn't issued with your sea bag, you didn't need it. And so I do not take the stance that I serve too, but I do sacrifice. And I have been sacrificing for this country for my whole life. I was born into this system, and you know, it certainly looks like I'm going to die in it. And I'd like to do the best I can to make it right for everyone else along the way. And taxes are something that needs to unite us. We constantly hear this latest tax bill being referred to as a cash out on the American people. And that's wealthy people cashing out on us. And that really is the best way for us to explain it. They have figured out how to trick the tax system so well that they can set it up where the taxes pay the businesses and pay them and some individuals rather than them paying anything in. And this cash out, as a debt collector who had to fully understand the entire process from the initial delinquency right through to the eviction and foreclosure and the collection of the deficiency judgment afterwards, I'm very comfortable with how to go about searching for assets and ensuring that they are appropriated properly so that the country will be protected and we don't experience a cash out. This idea that they can simply cash out money from the American people to insulate them against the storm that they feel coming is in some ways funny to me, that they think that that would actually work, that they're going to be able to cash out enough money from the American people to protect themselves from the fury that we, the American people, are going to rain down on them. And as a business professional who did this for a living, I want to make sure the American people know that I'm on your side and we're going to get that money and they're not going to do this to us anymore. There's absolutely no reason for taxes to be used against us. This idea of taxes, this has been around for 1,000 years. I'm hearing people out in society talk more and more every day about feudalism of medieval England. And that is where this tax structure began. We talk about Oprah hit the nail on the head when she said that she did not have the DNA to be president. A lot of people don't take that perspective into consideration. There is a genetic connection to the presidency. And once you know, thanks to Ancestry.com, I was able to click 1,000 years worth of leads. But once I realized and I learned that this whole system has been going on and has been used against us for literally 1,000 years, and the truth is, the only way to break the system is from within the system. So it is like the universe took 1,000 years to create the right bloodline and the right time and history to break this dam and blow it open once and for all. Last week I talked about, you know, how Trump had said that he was going to drain the swamp, but it's so obvious to me, especially reading my book post-election, that Trump doesn't know how the swamp was created, so he doesn't have a clue how to drain it. And if you're looking for inspiration on how to get that done, you can find it in the 400 pages that I have available for you on Amazon, Taming the Titta. But back to taxes. We're going to see a lot of changes take place this January. When the end of the year comes along and tax season rolls back in, there's going to be a much different tone for the people who are anticipating their refunds next year. It's all fun and games right now. But this cash out that they have planned, we may not be feeling it just yet. If you're concerned like I am, please reach out to your personal HR representative and update your I-9 so that you're ensuring that you're taking out the right amount of taxes. Because I will tell you from personal experience, there's no paying quite like paying taxes all year long. And then getting to the next year when you have to do your return and find out that you still owe another $5,000 or $10,000. And a lot of people are going to be in that situation this next year. And it's going to give us a lot of opportunities for us to talk about what exactly it means for wealthy people to do a cash out refinance on the American people. And how exactly are the American people going to get their money back? This trickle down economics thing that they have been selling us and cramming down our throat for decades, it doesn't work. The trickle has dried up. Everybody is starving of thirst, and it is time for us to break the dam wide open and make the economy fluid again by flushing money into the pockets of the American people. We have to do something about the income inequality in this country. Nobody should have to work three minimum wage jobs for $7.25 an hour just so they can afford a little one-bedroom apartment. It is crazy. If you have children and you have to take care of them, taxes are going to impact all of us. We have to figure out how we're going to pay this huge deficit that has been run up through this ridiculous tax scheme so that the uber wealthy and the 0.1% can cash out from the rest of us. It is we have to figure out how we're going to get through this and get back to the other side. And that has to come from wages. People need to make more money. We need to stop the bleeding with the taxes. We need to make it a flat rate. I believe 10% for the federal income tax rate will be more than enough. No write-offs, no deductions. Now, that is 10%. In addition to that, you have the 1.85% for your Medicare deductions that come out of every paycheck. That Medicare deduction has a cap. If somebody makes more than $120,000 a year, they only pay the Medicare tax on that first $120,000. It is time for us to remove the cap. It is time for us to get rid of all these write-offs and all these deductions because they're being manipulated to punish us and to cash out against us. We need to level the playing field, make it a flat, simple rate that we can all agree on, 10% for the federal income taxes, 1.85% for our health care, which is what Medicare is, and then we collect that money from every person's wages. The amount of money that we pay people on Social Security disability, there are some people who are living off of $700 a month. They're disabled. They're unable to get a job. $700 a month doesn't go very far. If this is supposed to lift somebody out of poverty or keep our elderly from being destitute, I don't know how $700 does that. We are going to have to reevaluate all of the numbers. But we need to make sure in that process, not only are we addressing this from all aspects, because the more somebody makes, the more they pay in taxes. The more they pay in taxes, the less our deficit is. The more they make, the less services they need. The less services they need, the less of a drain on our taxes. It is a pendulum, but it is a level, and we can level this out. We have swung very far to one side, and there is always a correction. We swing back to the other side. It moves back and forth, but we have hit rock bottom with our current wages, and it is time to lift them. People don't need to hear talk about 10 cents an hour in 2 years or maybe 50 cents an hour in 2 years. People need money now. The reason why the economy isn't flowing, the reason why people aren't buying stuff, it's not because it's not being advertised properly. The advertisements are beautiful. Everybody in America wants to buy stuff. We're Americans. That's what we do. We buy stuff. We don't have any money. In order for people to buy things, they're going to need to have money. And that is how the income, that's how the economy circulates. This is what they call income fluidity. It fluidly moves throughout the economy. The money goes from one place to another, and we pass it along, and everybody shares and enjoys. What we've got right now is, you know, just a few select people damming all the money up at the top, and they're just trickling a little bit down to the rest of us, and it's getting to a point where people are starving out. We are literally pricing people out of life. We're going to be moving into the winter months. It's going to be cold. You know, everybody's got a Game of Thrones reference. And the winter is coming. It's going to get cold. People are going to have heating bills. And every year we hear stories about families that are doing alternative heat with generators and space heaters because they're trying to save money because they can't afford their heating bills. And there's always a tragic event that's attached to them. We are literally pricing people out of life. The cost of groceries, a $7 an hour wage just doesn't cut it. People need more money. I don't know what the right number is. I certainly advocate a plan that would get us to $18.18 an hour now in 2018 with a mandatory $1 and 1 hour a cent raise every January. And I do believe that by the time we get to 2020, we would see with full hindsight that the best way to reduce our deficit and increase our tax collection is to pay people a decent, livable wage. You know, these topics that we talk about for our country, when we take taxes, we also take taxes for schools and for education and for the safety of our children. So this 10% in taxes, it goes a long way. It fixes our roads. It funds our military. It funds our police. We're all in this together. It is not socialism. It's we the people, and it's how we run our government. And there is capitalism involved. There is socialism involved. There's no communism here. There is a lot of tyranny, and there is a desperate grab for power and control right now, and now is our time to take the power back, to step into our inner titta. You know, the titta, Taming the Titta, my book, titta is a Hawaiian word for an aggressive female personality that will fight you. And there's a little titta in every woman that I have ever met. But I feel like we're working so hard to tame the titta and to keep her under control that we're losing some important battles. So for the rest of this show and my life, I am all about letting my inner titta out. There's time for us to stand up and fight and take it back. And if it takes a titta to do it, titta is here. My name is Sharman Smith. You can find me at SharmanSmith.com. You can find me on Facebook. You can find me on Twitter. I am everywhere right now doing interviews. You can get my book and get a real perspective into the vision that I see for our country. And I'll be back with you in just a few moments. Hi, this is Sharman again, back with you for Taming the Titta. I touched briefly before we left to the break on education, and I want to share with you, as we're talking more about fun with the first family, I want to share with you some more information. My oldest daughter, who is 23 years old, I was a homeless single mom with her when I was 24 and she was 4 years old, and I know how we'll be talking about homelessness and the struggles that all of us have overcome in our family. But I love this kid. She's spectacular. And I know the ends of the earth that I would go to protect her. She graduated from college this last May, and she's teaching eighth grade pre-algebra. And I know that our schools are struggling, and I honestly believe that each one of our teachers need to have their salaries doubled. We're going to find a way to fix the education system in our country. I believe we make more than enough money to pay for everything we need. And I refuse to believe that there's anything so wrong with this country that it can't be corrected with a little common sense and compassion. And one of the things that she said to me after this Parkland situation happened last year was terrifying. The first place I saw it picked up was by Occupy Democrats, and they said it was somewhere in Tampa, which was where my daughter was teaching, doing her intern year. And I texted her and no response, and I logged into her Track My iPhone app so that I could see if she was moving around, and she wasn't. And Parkland was terrifying for all of us, and it was upsetting for all of us. But for me personally, it was a very big reality check for the dangers that our teachers accept because they love these kids. They love our kids. She calls them her school babies. And one of the things she said to me was that somebody has to take care of the kids that are here now. And that's my job. These are my school babies, and I'm going to take care of them, even if it means putting my life on the line. And, you know, I don't have any grandchildren yet. They'll come someday, not anytime soon. But if she has school babies, then I have school grandbabies. And I promise you, I'm going to take care of all of our babies like they're my own. And we're going to fix this education system. And we're going to fix the issues. And we're going to make sure that our teachers are funded and our classrooms are funded and our kids are being given healthy food. And we're investing in the future of our country because our success comes from our human capital, not from businesses and not from the industry, but from the human way that we interact with all of us and the way we treat each other and talk to each other. You know, this experience for me, embracing this crazy dream of mine, running for president, it is the most amazing and wonderful thing I have ever done. I have met some of the most exciting people that I just couldn't have anticipated all the good things that were going to come from this. But I have met angels that walk among us, people who, you know, it is their profession to be paid to do these amazing services, and they're so talented, and they give free advice and help and edits and walkthroughs and coaching and tips and tricks that are just life-changing. And I have learned and I have realized and been reminded that people are so much better than we give them credit for, and everybody is struggling right now. And we feel like we're all alone and it's not getting any better. And this last week with this Supreme Court nomination has just been devastating. And as a survivor of sexual abuse, to be re-traumatized and re-triggered and to deal with it all day long, every day, is an exhaustion that I know all of us are feeling. So we want to make sure that we're doing things to take care of ourselves and our self-care. You know, all of us, we need to remember to take a few moments every day to just be grateful. I always, whenever I see the clock at 11:11, I take a moment just to thank the universe for the good things that are around me and the good things that are in my life. Every day above ground is a good day. And we all just need to smile a little more if you can, or, you know, help someone out if you can, or just remember that none of us know what the person next to us is struggling with. And we now more than ever need to be helping each other, because everyone is I call us the silent sufferers, the adult survivors of childhood sexual abuse. We have been shamed into silence for so long. There was a lie told once that sexual abusers, pedophiles, the reason why they abuse is because they were abused when they were a kid. And if you were a kid and you were abused, it means you're just going to grow up to become a pedophile. And it is one of the worst forms of victim blaming and victim shaming out there. It has forced victims into silence and to suffer in silence for their whole life. Some people go decades into their 60s and 70s without ever talking about it because they're terrified of being accused of the thing they despise the most. And the thing is that, you know, when you have survived such an event like this, it changes you. And you're never really the same again. And even if you suffer in silence, you're still suffering just because nobody knows what's going on. As a military spouse with PTSD, I'm very familiar with the figure that It's estimated between 20 and 22 veterans commit suicide a day. And that is a large number. That is a devastating number. But they're estimating that adult survivors of childhood sexual abuse, that 50 of us a day commit suicide. And so it is a huge issue. Most people think of PTSD just from the military, police, emergency services perspective, but over 50% of the people diagnosed with PTSD have it from childhood trauma. They have it from sexual trauma. There is a large population of us out there, and as people are becoming more aware of the survivors that are suffering in silence, and they're breaking that silence for the first time, and they're sharing their stories, we're seeing this recurring pattern of victim blaming and victim shaming. Why didn't they come forward? Why didn't they report? Why did they wait so long? I want you to know that this is the most painful conversation that you ever have in your life. When you have been abused and you have to tell the story, or you feel compelled to tell the story, and then the response that you get from people is so incredibly painful and difficult. There are people everywhere right now really struggling and really challenging with the weight of their life, with the weight of the politics and the atmosphere and the topics that are discussed on the news 24/7 every single second of the day. And we all need to take a few opportunities to take care of ourselves. Meditation is a wonderful technique that if you can ever figure out how to calm your mind for a few minutes, is supposed to make a really big difference in your life. I enjoy yoga. You get massages. It's long baths. But sometimes it's not just those things for self-care. Sometimes self-care means cutting toxic people out of your life and identifying that not everybody is in your boat or really supporting you. You know, sometimes we have people who we think are our friends and they smile at us, but they're drilling holes and poking at us whenever they can. And if you're one of those funny people and you got a comeback line for everything, and you think you have the answer to the solution to all these survivors who are coming out, and they should have just, you know, said something before and it's not your problem now, I'd like you to just take a few moments to quietly share your thoughts with yourself. Because there's a big adjustment that's going to be coming. And I know that this is going to be hard for you. But we're going to get through this together. And that does mean acknowledging just because something happened and it sucks, it doesn't mean we don't have to care. There are a lot of people hurting, and a little compassion will go a long way for all of us. Now, I'm not here to say, you know, it's all guys, because it certainly isn't. Lord knows I've been saved by enough good guys to know not all guys act this way. You know, and as a mom raising a son, I can honestly tell you that for as many fathers as I have met that have told me they didn't understand how bad women had it until they had a daughter, I did not realize how bad men had it until I had a son. So I promise you, throughout this experience, we're going to be sharing stories about the things that have happened to us and lessons learned and tips and tricks for all of us, because I know that the men out there are struggling too. You know, it was okay for a long time to make all these silly jokes, and now you're not sure what you can say and what you can't say. And now's the time for us to reevaluate those conversations, because a lot of us victims, when we hear you joke about rape, we just assume you're a rapist. And if you don't, we all know the definition of assume, right? Makes an ass out of you, makes an ass out of me. And victims are used to suffering in silence, so they just keep their opinions to themselves. But if you want to know what we're really thinking, whenever someone tells a rape or a pedophile or some sort of vulgar, disgusting, violent joke about domestic violence, we all just assume you're a predator. So if you don't want people to look at you that way, let's take a break from the jokes for a while. Right now, people are sensitive, and some of these things just aren't funny. And as people are coming forward and they're sharing their stories and they're breaking down, victim blaming, victim shaming, questioning, it's not benefiting any of us. And it impacts forgiveness. The conversation of forgiveness comes up all the time. And, you know, we're told in one hand to forgive and forget, turn the other cheek, but then you're constantly assaulted with the reality of the trauma. Every second there's a reminder and there's a trigger. And it all really does come down to mindfulness and managing those triggers as they come at us. So if you're somebody who is struggling with all the information that's out there right now, all these constant triggers, you know, mindfulness, distract yourself, make sure you're eating, make sure you're drinking. You know, we survivors joke about, you know, what doesn't kill us gives us horrible coping techniques. And it's okay. We all have bad coping techniques, bad things that happen to all of us. We need to be working together to develop good, positive coping techniques and being kind to each other, you know, biting your tongue when you have something that maybe is a little sarcastic to say, but maybe not 100% appropriate. It's a little thing. It's a little step. And compassionate is what we need in order to bring us back together. And I really believe that this country is an amazing place full of amazing people with angels that walk among us and help you out at just the right moment, at just the right time. And we need to be embracing that with each other and being there, being a hero for somebody. You never know how, you know, just helping someone out for just a little second doesn't really put you out of your way, but it makes all the difference to them. And we can be making these little changes and these little improvements all around us. And just a little bit every day is going to make a big difference. Before we know it, everything's going to be back to normal and people are going to be kind to each other again. And we're going to get there. We're going to get there together. I want to thank you very much for your time today. I have appreciated it. This really is one of the most exciting things I've ever done, speaking about the issues that I'm passionate about, sharing the knowledge and wisdom that I've gained through my 42 years here on this earth. Thank you. My name is Sharman Smith. I'm a Democratic candidate for president. You can find me at SharmanSmith.com. You can find my book on Amazon or Barnes & Noble or at Walmart or Target. It's Taming the Titta. T-I-D-A. And this is all about the change that we're going through, this campaign. This is all about embracing your inner titta and standing up and fighting for whatever it is that you believe. And if you believe that there's something that is calling towards you that you need to be doing, reach out to me through Facebook, reach out to me through Twitter, and let's see what we can do together to address the issues that are plaguing all of us. There's no way I can think of all of it. And together we can accomplish anything. Nobody can do this alone, but together we can do anything. Thank you very much. This is Sharman. Goodbye.